This is Aviator Cast, episode 102, changing the world one pilot at a time.
Calling all aviators, you've landed at Aviator Cast, the top podcast resource for interviews, refreshers, lessons, training topics, and more. Join weekly and share in our passion for flying things, exploring the rare air through flight. And now, another episode. Pre-flight complete, fuel on board, and flight plan filed. Let's kick the tires and light the fires. Here's your host, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, 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 aviators. You've landed at Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer. Learning to fly is something that most anyone can accomplish, I believe, with enough PhD, or as what I call it, passion, hard work, and determination. It can be done no matter who you are. As an instructor, I myself still have so much growth that I need to go through in my upward climb to perfect my craft. But I'm enjoying the journey and the process and having you here with me. So that is why we're here today. We're here at Aviator Cast. Welcome to this, the 102nd episode. I know that I haven't been with you guys in a while, but it's better late than never. This podcast is brought to you by Aviator Training by Angle of Attack. Turn your passion into reality. Get started at aviatortraining.com. So, it's been a while. I have been a very, very busy person, a busy pilot, aviator, if you will. Lots has been going on, and I'll share a couple of those things with you. But if you've never been to Aviator Cast before, well, what is it all about? First and foremost, we're all about aviation passion. If you don't have a passion for aviation, you may not want to listen to this podcast because it might seem over the top. Hey, why are these people so crazy about flying? Well, we just are. We don't really know why sometimes we love airplanes and love training and becoming better pilots and always perfecting our craft. But some of us have started to connect to that. We love that this changes our world in a way, gives us a different perspective, a bit of adventure, and it really just opens up a lot of new opportunities and new places to us because we are pilots. So some of the things we do on here, we do inspiring aviator interviews, whether that's airline, military, corporate, instructors, everyday pilots like you and I. And really the prerequisite for those interviews you'll hear on this show is simply passion. So I find those people in the community and bring them on the show. Also, we have insight into different parts of the aviation community. I myself, I'm an instructor, and I really enjoy getting into the training aspects of things, how we think about safety as pilots, and maybe how we would approach a certain topic or situation as a pilot and do so safely. Sometimes industry trends, if there's something in the industry going on that is maybe negative or positive, we need to talk about, but I don't get too much into the politics side of things if there's something going on. In other words, we're not going to be talking about ATC privatization on this podcast. I just don't really see the point. So many other people are talking about it. And the most important thing overall is that we're always improving, always becoming better aviators through what we talk about. And, you know, one of the other reasons you may want to listen to the show is maybe at one time you wanted to be a pilot, whether it was early on or recently, or you were in it at one time and kind of left. There are so many people that, you know, got to solo and never finished. But really, now you're back into it. You want to knock off the rust. You want to finish off your license, whatever it is. Here you are. And then there are those that are just getting the courage to fly and kind of investigating, you know, what all this is about. So you will find a lot of that sort of material, not only on this particular episode, but if you go back through the past on these episodes through Aviator Cast, just find something that kind of piques your interest. Have a listen. If it's something you think that you like, then you're always welcome to, of course, consume more of the episodes, but also reach out to me and I'll talk about a few ways that you can do that. So on today's episode, episode 102, the last time I gave you guys an episode was in May, a very long time ago. It is now September. Things have been very busy. I told you that I was going to be opening up a flight school. Well, that happened. So a lot, it takes a lot to get a flight school going. I'm going to do a whole episode just on that and the challenges behind that. So you as pilots can kind of understand what's going on behind the scenes in some of these flight schools, and then what it took for me to get it running and what I think about when I'm working on it. But on today's episode, I want to start out coming full circle. So today we're going to be talking about the first private pilot student that passed their check ride. He wasn't 100% my student. I, you know, got him when he had X amount of hours and then finished him off just this last Sunday. So it was quite the process. I learned a whole lot during the process. So that's going to be kind of the instructor perspective, and also a bit of perspective on just the story of this particular individual. So just a really cool, great real world example of what it's like to become a pilot. And because this person, Daniel, is older, not that much older, he's 40 years old, he had some challenges that I know a lot of you guys have with family and money and time. So I think there are a lot of great lessons to learn there as well. Before we get into the content on today's episode, as always, you guys know that I read a review on the show. So if you leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or some other location where I can see it, those are typically the podcast locations where I check, and I read your review on the show, then I will send you an AviatorCast t-shirt. Now, I owe a number of you AviatorCast t-shirts. We're going to be printing some up pretty soon here, get a new design going. But if I read your review on the show, make sure you write me, because then I will get you all signed up for those t-shirts when they're ready. Today's review comes from Black Dog Pilot from the USA. He gives us 5 stars and says, "Amazing aviation podcast, ! I'm so glad I landed on this podcast, as it has to be the best I've heard yet. I'm a newly soloed student pilot working toward earning my private pilot, and found this to be reassuring as I am stressing the whole ACS process. After listening to this, I'm looking forward to it. I can't thank you enough for bringing this very valuable topic to a podcast. If all your podcasts are as good as this one, and I'm now listening to another, you've got a fan for life, because I know this is a lifelong learning process of becoming the best pilot I can be. Now a subscriber, I can hardly wait to pass your AviatorCast podcast on to my fellow students, as well as aviating friends and already certificated pilots I engage in hangar talk with." And then he says, "Inspired ! So Black Dog Pilot, really appreciate it. You're absolutely right. You know, when you're going through your training, it's pretty difficult to sift through all of the stuff that the FAA is going to require you to do as a private pilot to pass your test. And if you just pick up the ACS, it's going to be really confusing, and it's going to be overwhelming to look at that and feel like, man, I have to know every single one of these things. As you said, you know, it's a lifelong process of learning. Building up to a private pilot certificate is just one little step, one little bit of knowledge at a time, and it all does come to you in time, and eventually you'll get to the place where you are ready for the test, and assuming you've prepared correctly, really above and beyond what you needed to prepare for, but assuming you're ready at the peak of your skills, then it's time to go and take that test, and you're going to hear a bit of a different story like that today in the podcast. But I wish you the best of luck. And of course, make sure you reach out to me at aviatorcast.com, and I'll direct you on how to sign up for that shirt. Best of luck on pursuing your private pilot. All right. So a quick break, and then we'll jump into the content for this episode. Now, before I get into this, I want to make very clear that it is not my intention at all to paint a picture of my student in a negative light. There are things that anyone who goes through aviation training has to work on, and they have struggles in certain areas and, you know, areas where other people wouldn't. And it's just an individual person-by-person process that's different for everybody. So I'm going to be really careful not to sound negative toward my student or paint him in a light that is detrimental, but I do want to be honest about this process and the challenges that came up while he and I were working together on his private pilot license. So kind of that disclaimer out of the way, of course, this entire process from front to back overall was an incredibly positive process. Obviously, there are things and hiccups that we had along the way, but overall, we got to a place where eventually he was able to become a private pilot, something that took a whole lot of effort to get to, and it's well-deserved. It's very well-deserved in this case, and I was there to witness a whole lot of that process. So this is a story of my neighbor, actually. His name is Daniel. He and I have been neighbors since I moved into my house now in the neighborhood. He moved up here a couple years before me, I believe, and I had lived in another house. Anyway, I now live in this neighborhood. Daniel is 40 years old. He's a family man. He is he has a dream of becoming a commercial pilot because some of his work has been involved with being a professional bear guide for some of the tour companies here in town, where he will show the customers the bears over across the inlet here. It's a very popular tourist destination for that sort of thing. I've done bear viewing several times. It's absolutely incredible, but it really helps to have a professional there that understands the bears and their behavior and how to interact with them if that interaction does come up. So Daniel is a professional bear guide. He actually helped with the Disney movie Bears quite a bit. And so that's part of his background expertise. And a lot of that is connected with aviation. So I think through that, he kind of fell in love with this idea of maybe being one of the pilots someday. Just a big outdoors guy. He's a family man. He has a couple boys and a wife, and he's a really good dad. You know, as his neighbor, I get to see him interacting with his family and all the stuff that he does for his kids and how much he loves his family. He's also a volunteer EMS and fireman. He works in special education right now as his career, and he's just an overall really great guy and has this dream of going for aviation. So he came over to my house one day knowing that this is what I do, and he just kind of brought it up. Hey, Chris, I want to do this. What is it going to take? So he really actually dove into it. He bought an airplane, sight unseen, pretty much. The day he looked at it, he bought it. It's a 172. It's actually the 172 we use for our flight school. We lease it from him. Got right into it and had this goal of going down south to California and getting his private pilot in 2 weeks from one of those accelerated programs. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But of course, there was a lot of prep leading up to that. So as all of this is happening, he wants to become a pilot. He's going to be going down to the accelerated course. Of course, there's plenty to do before that. And one of the prerequisites for this accelerated course is you need to have gone and done and passed your written exam with at least an 80%. So he did that, and I was actually a pretty integral part of that process. And it actually really helped me out because at the time I had just received my commercial. I was going for my CFI in May, and it was the late February, March timeframe when he was going through this. So I was pretty fresh and pretty sharp on a lot of the knowledge required for him to get his written. So on these late winter nights when it was dark outside and really cold, Daniel would come over to my house late at night after his boys were asleep and my boy was asleep. And we'd sit at my kitchen table and we'd just be there for hours just poring over the books and going through different topics that were challenging him. So I actually pointed him to King Schools to go through their course, and then we would supplement that with knowledge, you know, there at my house. So the deal was, you know, show up with questions or things you need to work on, things that are challenging you on the written test, and we'll go over things one by one and we'll talk about them, you know, bring snacks, whatever it is. so it just really worked out. Now, of course, me going for my CFI, this helped me quite a bit because I got to practice teaching and see a lot of what I was learning through fundamentals of instruction, which is something a flight instructor has to go through. Basically, teaching in aviation is what it is, on just the basic challenges that people have in connecting with aviation knowledge and starting simple and growing to more complex and, you know, so many different things in how you teach and keep people comfortable and keep them having fun and keep them learning. There's just so many little psychological aspects to that. It's almost like psychology for aviation teaching is what fundamentals of instruction is. So we'd sit down at the table, we just study, and we did this quite a bit. We spent many, many hours together preparing him for this written test. And then we ended up taking a road trip together up to Anchorage where we did the written test. Now, it's pretty neat because he took his private pilot written test, and at the same time, I was actually in the room taking my own test for fundamentals of instruction. So he and I were along this simultaneous journey in going through this process. So, of course, fundamentals of instruction is more of a, you know, psychological question sort of test. There's no arithmetic involved. You're not looking at any figures or very few figures for that test. So it was a quick test for me. I was done in about 45 minutes or less. And then Daniel took a couple hours on his, just because that's the nature of the different tests. So it turns out that he passed. He got an 83%. I was really excited about that. And so now he had his written test and he was ready to go to California to do his accelerated program. Now, I want to talk about this process too. And while I wasn't there, Daniel was calling me throughout his time working with this particular company. And I have also had my own experience with this particular company. And don't mind sharing some of my thoughts as well. So the company that he was working with down there is called AFIT. They are a company that particularly caters to people that need to get something done really quickly. They need to get an instrument rating in a week or 10 days. Or in his case, he needed to get his private pilot in 2 weeks. So the idea was that Daniel would go down to California. He wouldn't have the normal family distractions. He'd be able to get this done in 2 weeks and just really buckle down and get it done. Now, looking back and understanding what he and I had gone through and also knowing what I had gone through with AFIT and trying to do an accelerated course at one time for my instrument rating, this just doesn't really work. And I'll share a little bit why. So when Daniel got down there, of course, California typically has nice weather, but you know, as Murphy's Law will have it, weather wasn't the best throughout the process. He had a pretty great instructor. His name was Sam, really nice guy. For the most part, they got along and did well. And Sam did a decent job in training him and being thorough. And of course, I see all that in the logbooks and everything. But it's just it's really a cram course. So the pros of this sort of program are, of course, you get total focus to go in and just do it now without family or work or any distractions. Your mind is just completely on the training, which is something that would be great if we could all do something like this. Of course, you have a dedicated instructor too. You essentially own that person full time and they are there 24 hours a day if you need it to go through the training, within reason. Of course, you've got to eat and sleep and stuff, but it's a dedicated program. You know, you're paying a premium to have that person there all the time. And you're also paying to have an airplane there all the time for you to use. Of course, that means that the airplane's got to be maintained and things like that, but you essentially have a team and a process behind you to get this done. And AFIT also lays out a curriculum that's very structured that allows you to go through. Now, getting to the real world aspects of how this works. As you know, airplanes are not always available. Maintenance things pop up. Airplanes go down. You can't really plan for that unless you just have a fairly new airplane that just doesn't have a lot of these problems, or a really good maintenance program that just is almost progressive in the way that they handle maintenance. So Daniel had a challenge with airplane availability. So there were days or half days where an airplane wasn't available, or he was bouncing between airplanes. So of the already very critical 2 weeks, and every day within that 2 weeks, he was losing a day here and there to an airplane not being available. Of course, weather is always an issue. Whenever you're doing training, you run up against things that you just aren't good at, or you have things that you regress on, or learning plateaus that you get to, and all of those are completely normal. But the problem is, when you don't have time within that time frame, within that 2 weeks, to account for that, then there's just hardly any wiggle room. So there's no rooms for what ifs. There's no room for the airplane being down, or the weather being bad, or, you know, just really difficult challenges that are increasingly, seems with aviation, increasingly difficult for older people to go through it. Now, I'm not calling Daniel old, because 40 really isn't old, but I know that even at 32 myself, I don't learn like I once did, and things are a little slower than they once were. And that's just the way it is. That's the way our minds work for the most part. You know, of course, we have people out there that are prodigies and whatever they do, but that's just kind of where things led. Now, even with all of those frustrations and things that kind of got in the way of Daniel doing that, he almost got to the point where he could take the check ride. And it just so happened that the weather really did kind of close in the last few days, and the winds were blowing 40 knots, and, you know, he had to meet the DPE in a different area, and it just wasn't conducive to do the check ride. And so without the guarantee or anything from AFIT that things would follow through, he left that accelerated course without having gained his license. Now, I think overall, if Daniel were here, he would tell you that it was a positive experience for him and he doesn't regret doing it. But these accelerated programs just don't really work. I'm sure there are some people that can get their licenses within these time frames, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're well-rounded or pilots that are ready to go out on their own, if you will. And I don't mean that as a, definitely don't mean it as a negative toward Daniel. It's just that through our experience after the fact, it took a lot of training to get to the point where I felt a quality pilot or aviator should be, for me to let them out on their own to where they can handle the real world. So, and then having gone through my own process with AFIT, I was less than impressed when I went through it and actually failed my instrument check ride doing a program with them. So I cannot recommend this company, and there are very few of these accelerated programs that I can recommend. There are a couple out there that do a good job, but they generally have better prerequisites, and it's a specific team that you go and meet with, rather than what AFIT does, is lining you up I don't want to say random people, but people that they vet all over the country. So I just don't think it works. I think that it takes a lot more to become a pilot than just a couple weeks. There's just too much your brain has to go through, not only ingesting the knowledge, but also processing all of this stuff and working it into this new world that you have as a pilot. And doing so within a few weeks just doesn't work. Now, if we're talking 3 or 4 weeks and it's full dedication, then, you know, we may be talking a possibility that that could happen, especially 4 weeks. I could see something like that happening. But 2 weeks, I can't see from zero to hero how that's possible. So that's kind of where Daniel got. He had his written done. He had gone through this AFIT program and came back to Alaska from California empty-handed there, but having gained some good knowledge and some good training from Sam down there. And you know, now has this airplane in Alaska and kind of ready to go. But then, as many of you would know, if you lived in Alaska, things get very busy here during the summer. So busy that people that do podcasts don't do a podcast because it gets so busy. You know, speaking of myself, where he just got way too busy to really work on the training. And how typical is that, right? Where something, you know, it's good timing to go through the training and everything's going to work, but then all of a sudden it's like life circumstances have changed and I got to take a step back now and not do my training right now. And, you know, you're really kind of limiting yourself in terms of that knowledge slipping away from you. And then, of course, moving to a completely different location from where you started your training, and then dealing with a brand new instructor that, you know, although you know him, you don't know his style and what he expects. So summer is very busy in Alaska. And as I mentioned, Daniel is a bear guide and got picked up by a local tourism company here, Smoky Bay Air, as a bear guide, a naturalist, which they really loved him and they wanted him to be working a lot more than he had kind of planned, but it all worked out as, you know, obviously great experience for him to be there. And it actually kind of kept his mind in the game a little bit too, because he was flying so often with those pilots and could kind of see what was happening and lessons learned, right? So that helped in a way. Now, of course, the whole dynamic at this point changed, because initially I was just helping Daniel get to the written, share my knowledge with him to accomplish the written test, which was a big deal, but, you know, it's only part of the battle and actually not a very difficult part of the battle. Now he was mine. He was my responsibility in terms of me eventually signing him off to go to the practical test and take the oral test as well. So I had to get to the place with him where I was comfortable. Any bad habits that he had formed or things that I thought needed to be changed operationally between what how they do it in California and how they do it in Alaska, knocking off any rust that he had from now extended periods of time between flying with his busy family life and with doing the bear guiding. Again, time and money, right? It's always a thing with flight training. And then now it would be my responsibility to be the primary mentor for him, to work him through this process. This is already kind of a role I was in, but now I was both the mentor and instructor. Of course, the friend dynamic. You know, it's not always a good idea for an instructor to teach a friend, and I wouldn't always do that. There are some people or some family members or friends I would simply just have to say no to, because I know that the nature of our relationship wouldn't allow for the honest and linear and very important roles of instructor and student, and that those would need to remain intact for me to be honest and for me to help them through the process and for them to feel comfortable enough through the process. Because really, it just has to be cut and dry sometimes with training. I mean, you have to almost emotionally take yourself out of the process and step back and just say, okay, that was really crappy, and now I'm going to go and do this next thing. And I'm just going to take one little hit at a time and keep moving forward. You know, there's this monologue in the movie Rocky Balboa where he's talking to his son and he says, it's not about how hard you get hit. It's about how hard you can get hit, knocked down, and keep getting up and keep moving forward. And that's what aviation training is all about. But when you're friends or family, there are emotions built into it. And Daniel and I, throughout our training, came up against times where we were visibly frustrated with each other. You know, things just boil to a point where we don't understand or we're not speaking the same language. And, you know, sometimes it was my problem. Sometimes it was something he wasn't doing correctly. And then sometimes I was making miscommunication or he was, and not to point fingers or anything. It's just to say that people are people, and that when you're friends, emotions can boil over and be a little bit more raw than it would be with just an acquaintance or an instructor, right? So that it's just a little bit different. It's the difference between a teacher at school disciplining you and being able to move forward with that and kind of understand, and then like your parent disciplining you and you crying and running to the bedroom, and it's just different with family and friends. During the summer, even though Daniel was busy, we did want to finish this off, and we worked here and there to do a cross country here or do some pattern work there. But it's few and far between, not only because I was busy getting the flight school started up, but also because Daniel was very busy. So it became less of a priority for both of us. And as an instructor, you also can't really take the lead fully. You know, you can't make people want to do flight training. There's a certain amount of self-drive you need to allow people to have, especially adults, where it's up to them to say, hey, let's go hardcore, let's do this. Or, hey, I'm too busy right now, I need to pull back and reduce my training schedule. So that's something as an instructor in a flight school, you've got to be sensitive to. After the short 4-month season or 5-month season here in Alaska, all of a sudden it's done. You know, summer's over and it ends in a couple weeks. The shops close up and they board up the windows and all the tourists leave town and the cruise ships stop coming and the bear tours stop and traffic isn't as bad. Not that traffic is ever bad here. If you have to wait at a stop sign, that's kind of traffic here in town, but everything suddenly slows down. So here Daniel and I are, our summer's disappeared and now we're thinking, what's next? You know, where are we going next? Is this going to happen sort of thing? So Daniel and I kind of had this now or never conversation where it's like, okay, if this is going to happen, it's got to happen now. And it was really a place I think Daniel had to come to as the student. He had to realize, hey, this is really dragging out. I'm identifying that I have some family challenges with this because I have a young family and they need me and, you know, XYZ, you know, so many things that are in demand of your time. And then of course, a spouse and money spent and time spent, and you kind of get in this cycle. It's like Groundhog Day. Am I ever going to get there on my private pilot? Am I ever going to get there? And it becomes pretty disheartening when you're in a loop like that. So it's very important, not only as a mentor for me to kind of point those things out and talk about them and see if I can ask questions or help in any way to get people through. But at the end of the day, it's up to the individual to kind of make their own destiny and decide when it's time to go full forward. Daniel and I, after speaking with our very busy local DPE that we had a hard time getting a hold of, we finally got a date. We got October 17th. It was going to be the day that Daniel took his check ride. Of course, that gives us an actual target to work toward. And so this was it. You know, we had been flying here and there. He wasn't totally out of the loop. He had been doing pattern work and we were working on this and that and the other. But now, with everything he had been through up until this point and everything we had been going through together, it was time to put our eye on the prize and make this happen, get out of that cycle of flight after flight, you know, just kind of maintaining skills rather than actually building skills to actively, okay, now what is needed to get the private pilot license? What do we need to work on, you know, doing flights and evaluations on where we're going from here? About a week before Daniel's check ride, we sat down and just had a heart to heart. And he was really honest to me. And this is what an instructor relationship, student relationship should be. He was really honest with me that, you know, here are the challenges I see. Here's what I need from you. You know, I need a schedule. I need to know what we're doing. I need to know it beforehand. I need to know that I can plan on this time off of work and I can do this and that. And so I said, okay, you know, thanks for being honest. Let's buckle down here. Let's make this happen. We put together a really nice schedule. Of course, after having just laid it out on the table and we were honest with each other, saying, you know, him saying what I need from you and what I think I need from me to do this. And then me saying, okay, this is what I need from you. And this is what I expect from me to do this. And then, you know, coordinating with our wives and helping them understand that, hey, we're going for this. It's going to affect our family lives. So here we go. So we came up with a very detailed schedule of what Daniel would be working on for the week, what we'd be working on together. And we started to go through that process. Now, while it was a schedule, there had to be creativity and a bit of fluidity to the process throughout so that we could go from one thing to the next and work on the things that he really needed to work on. But what we did know is that this was going to be complete and total dedication to getting Daniel to the check ride, and it was the week leading up to it. Now, totally doable. Daniel had come a long ways since then. We had been flying together over the summer here and there, and I was helping break some habits that I didn't really like safety-wise, some language things I didn't really like safety-wise, just wanting things done a particular way as an instructor for mostly safety reasons. And then there were plenty of things I just let go of that weren't the way I would do things that weren't necessarily an issue, and I didn't feel like retraining those things. But there were plenty of those instances where Daniel and I had been working on getting him kind of to this point where we could push for it. So our typical schedule, if you can imagine this, is every day Daniel and I were blocked off from 3 p.m. until 9 p.m. And that was the time that he was going to essentially own me each day, where we would go on a flight, a particular flight that we set aside, like an evaluation flight of the ACS maneuvers and skills. We plan on doing a solid brief, a flight, a solid debrief. And then after that, we would do ground. After our flight from about 3 to 5, we'd do ground until 9, 10, or 11 p.m. So that was the weekdays. After he had gone to work early in the morning, he would come here to the office or to the airport and we'd go do all that. Variety of topics, variety of maneuvers, really pounding the pavement on pattern work and doing the maneuvers. It was a whole lot of work. We also worked quite a bit on doing cross-country flights. And so we flew up to Kenai and Salatna from Homer, which is only about 50 miles away. It's just barely cross-country loggable, but it's the closest towered airport. And we spent some time up there getting used to towered communications. That wasn't very easy because there was one time we came into the pattern in Kenai, and for a brand new pilot to understand, okay, we have a non-towered airport operation, which is very loose and actually very up to us to determine where people are and what they're doing, to now we go to a towered airport where they tell us exactly what to do, but the entries into the pattern are very atypical, where we're doing extended, 10-mile bases to final on X runway. And then to make matters worse, the runways in Kenai are 02 and 20 left and right. And so it just gets super confusing. So we come into Kenai on one of our flights, and the tower controller, who was very nice, he was, nice guy. He wasn't trying to jerk our chain, but he changed Daniel's landing instruction 4 times within a minute. He said, okay, make left. He said, make left downwind for runway 20 right. And then he says, oh no, make right downwind for runway 20 left. Oh no, now cross midfield and make left downwind for runway 20 left. Oh, never mind, turn right downwind and make midfield and make right downwind for runway 20 right. So it was just so confusing all within a minute. And I'm thinking, there's no learning going on right now in terms of that. So I just said, hey, Daniel, here's where to go and what to do, and just let that go, because that was ridiculous. Just things like that, but all really good learning experiences, right? Feeling the pressure, not absorbing that pressure, performing still, flying the airplane, again, the whole aviate, navigate, communicate thing. That was our week. I mean, he took Friday and Saturday off. It was an all-day affair from morning to night on Friday and Saturday. But those weren't my only commitments. I also had ground school I had to do. I'm doing a ground school class right now with several locals. And so I had that to do on certain nights, had to not only prepare for that, but teach it. And then I was flying with another local student, Andre, who's just starting. So I was doing flights with him in the morning before Daniel and I were meeting in the afternoon. And I flew 30 hours last week. It was a lot of flying. It was a blast, but it was a lot of flying. Of course, the challenges you go through in pushing so hard on a schedule like that is, again, going back to teaching a friend, it's emotions can get raw sometimes, and you got to give each other the benefit of the doubt, and you've got to be a nice person, but an assertive person, and you've got to give and take and so on. And so I think that's a little bit more difficult than just kind of taking someone's money, you know, that's a lot different. As an instructor, you've got to know when to shut up and let someone learn something, let them go down a rabbit hole and learn a lesson, or when you need to intervene and teach a lesson. So that's a big challenge on, hey, is this more of a learning experience if I chime in and say something, or is it more of a learning experience if I let them make this mistake? Those are the sorts of things I'm always thinking of. Is it a better learning experience if I demonstrate this maneuver and show them how to do it? Or is it a better learning experience if I let them do the maneuver, even though it may not look perfect? So, you know, plenty of those things that I'm thinking of as I'm going through the whole training process. Of course, there's the I'm safe checklist that applies here when you have such a rigorous schedule and you're constantly working together. You know, Daniel and I would go fly and then we'd find something to eat, whether my wife brought food or we went and got takeout or whatever it was. We were careful about getting our rest and not studying too much, because you can get to a point where you just completely burn out. We needed to watch our energy level and our mood level and see how each other was doing and work through that process. And then, of course, throughout, you guys know that I'm all about having fun. And we need to have fun, or learning is not going to happen, but we also have to be meeting those goals. So all that said, everything actually went really well. It was very hard work for both he and I, but we got to a place where I said, hey, Daniel, this was Friday night, his check ride was Sunday. I said, okay, Daniel, I'm going to be recommending you for check ride on Sunday. So we're going to go through and we're going to do those endorsements. Here's what we need for tomorrow, Saturday, our last day together. Here are the things I'd like to see us get to and the extra proficiency we need to get to. Because at that stage, if we weren't to the place where I could recommend him by that point in time, it was probably time to call the DPE and say, hey, let's reschedule. Because you need to be prepared, over-prepared, and not just prepared. And we are to the point where we are already prepared, and I felt like the next day we could really get to the point where we were over-prepared. So then it was go time. Then it was like, okay, this is real. This is happening. It's happening in 2 days, and tomorrow's our last day to do these items, these last kind of polish-up items. And we were ahead of the game on that, ahead on paperwork. We had our IACRA in, and it all just started clicking together, had the logbooks done. Great process. That was the way to do it. It was the way that worked for Daniel, because again, just like his initial intentions to go to California and do something similar, he needed to take a step back from his family for the sake of his family and also for the sake of just focusing and getting it done, to focus on the training, work through it step by step, finish it off, and then he can be home again, you know, as crazy as that sounds. But it is a really good way to do it if it's possible for someone to do it that way. So I assisted Daniel in creating a schedule that would allow that to happen. And really a big thanks goes to both of our wives for allowing it to take place. So check ride day, Sunday. We've done all we can do at this point. There's no more training to be done. If there's any training to be done at this point, you know, it's probably going to go in one ear and out the other because the nerves are high, right? I mean, it's check ride day. But I work very hard to relax, or I worked very hard to relax Daniel in this situation. And I really believe in relaxing for your check ride and not stressing too much, just being prepared and knowing your stuff and being who you are, leaning on your strengths and have fun and count it as a lesson with a really great aviator pilot that knows a whole lot, because it's a really unique experience to do a check ride. So we've done all we can do. We jump in the airplane. We fly up to Solotna where the test will take place. We get all our paperwork in order there, which had been prepared this several days beforehand. We lay it all out. Dean, our DPE, shows up. He's such a friendly and nice guy. Just really tries to help you feel relaxed. And that really helps students too. So Daniel asked me as we were approaching Soldotna, I didn't have anything to say between here and there because I just wanted him to do everything I had taught him along the way and have one last time to fly and enjoy the scenery and just relax. He asked me, what's your advice? And he asked bits and pieces of information. I just said, hey, there's nothing else to teach. Just relax, have fun, and be yourself, kind of like what I said. And then if I were to be giving myself advice, and I did have these internal thoughts prior to the test, is, you know, you've done all you can. You have prepared the student. He's ready to go. You've gone through the process that you learned as a CFI to check all the boxes and make sure there aren't any hiccups in paperwork or that, you know, all the requirements are met. And so I was very thorough and careful to make sure all that had happened. Of course, I wasn't perfect in doing that and have things I need to do in the future. But just coming to this place where I had to tell myself too that he is prepared, and there is such a thing as being over-prepared, and there is such a thing as preparing so much that it becomes detrimental. So at some point, you've got to kick the student out of the nest. You got to say, okay, good or bad, it's time to see where you stand with the FAA, because I think you know all you need to know, and you're showing me a lot of things that, based on my experience, you're ready to be a private pilot and you're meeting the requirements, and, you know, let's go for this. So beautiful flight, clear flight, very nice. Nerves all around, obviously, but I felt like the mood was pretty good, because I'm not one to get hyped up really for anything or too stressed out. And I really wanted to emanate that to Daniel as well. And I felt like he was actually doing pretty well as well. So my nervous part was getting all the endorsements and paperwork done. That's kind of why I wanted to be there with him, especially since it was out of town. Wanted to make sure all the paperwork was done, and that if I needed to sign anything, then I did. And there were a couple things I needed to fix in the logbooks, especially since he had gone through with several instructors throughout this process. It can get a little bit confusing. So I went through all that. So then, you know, the DPE said, okay, we're done. You know, now you need to disappear. So I went into the other room. There's a simulator in there, kind of an ATD simulator, where I put on my AN20 headset with ANR, or my Bose A20 headset with ANR, and because I could kind of hear them in the other room every now and again talking about something, but I wanted to be honest about the fact that I wasn't listening to what they were doing. So I turned on my headset and I was quiet and couldn't hear anything they said, and just listened to a football game through the Bluetooth while I practiced ILS approaches on the simulator. And it was a long time in there. You know, I was in there for 4 hours, and that means Daniel was in the oral for 4 hours. So Dean was very thorough in how he did the oral. I don't think one stone was left unturned, but he did make Daniel feel comfortable throughout the process, and everything went good and Daniel passed it. And this was the part that he and I both kind of identified as maybe the hiccup in the check ride. But as is often the case, your strengths end up usually being things that you screw up on in a check ride. So he did really well on the oral, which was something he was nervous about. And then he went and did the flight, which for the most part did well, but didn't do as well on some things as he had done with me. So we did lunch right after the oral, and then he went up and flew. I listened on the radio, just radio calls, and then I was outside watching as well, shooting some video and pictures and different things, and just kind of anxiously awaiting to see if things would go well. Apparently things went pretty well, but when he came back into the pattern, you know, I told him, if you're not on target, just do a go around. But I saw that the pattern work wasn't exactly what I thought it should be. So I'm sitting there cheering, no, no, don't do that, no. But all went well at the end of the day. Daniel passed everything off. They came in. You know, I was anxious about it a little bit. I didn't know if all went well or if there was something we had to work on. But all went well. They stayed in the airplane for a while and talked. I didn't know yet if he had passed or not, but then they came out and, you know, big thumbs up, kind of did it. It was, I don't want to call it anticlimactic because it was a really important moment, but it was this humble moment for Daniel and for me and for the DPE where it's like, and this is the best place you can come to in a check ride. I think the absolute best place you can come to. And it's how I felt when I did my commercial as well, where yes, you performed the skills well. Yes, the oral went well. Yes, everything went well, but there were things that you could have done better. Things that you didn't quite understand in a way you did before. Things that you missed here and there that just weren't perfect. And you feel like you deserve the license. And you feel very excited and happy that you reach this point, but there's this overarching feeling and aura of humility and an understanding that it doesn't end here. That from here, you need to keep learning, you need to keep moving forward, you need to keep building on those skills, because even though this is the peak of my abilities as an instructor now to pass off a student, and the peak of Daniel's abilities to take the test, it still doesn't feel good enough. There's this appetite and desire for more that, yes, I did my best. I got to this point. I don't regret the journey behind me, but that's not good enough. Now I need to move forward. I need to be a better pilot in Daniel's case, or I need to be a better instructor in my case. And there's this, It's actually, the coolest feeling you can have, because A, you deserve it. B, it doesn't end here. There's more flying to do. C, plenty of more learning. And D, he passed his freaking check ride and he's a private pilot. How cool is that? So as an instructor, for me, my first student to pass his private pilot, it felt really good to me, But again, I had so many thoughts of what I could have done to improve the process. And then I had to look forward and say, okay, this isn't just the first. It's just the first of many, you know. This is a process I need to make even better next time and can do it even better for the next person. It just got me really motivated to get my next student. And then for Daniel, coming full circle on him, there was almost this look of shock on his face, like, oh my gosh, it's done. You know, he's totally done. And he now has his temporary certificate and now he can go take passengers. So I told him, Daniel, I'm not logging dual on the way home. I'm your first passenger. I'm not going to log it. You know, this is all you. And I didn't, even though I could have got that 1 hour of time in my logbook. Daniel was carrying a passenger for the first time with me. However, when he got home, he called ahead to his family and they met him there and he took his family up right away. He felt comfortable enough in terms of energy and he had eaten and things where he felt like that was a good idea. And I had some cameras up to film him and his family on their first flight, you know, his wife sitting in the right seat and then the boy sitting in the back. And what he told me the next day was that he felt so much more comfortable than he thought he would taking his family up, because everything that he and I had been going through was in preparation, not for a practical test or a check ride as it were, but for being a safe and efficient and knowledgeable pilot, private pilot. So he did that. And so subsequently he has told me that, that he is much more comfortable than he thought he would be because he's really not doing anything different. He's making the same radio calls. He's making the same safety decisions. He's doing all the same things. It just so happens that now he gets to share it with his boy sitting next to him or with his family in the airplane, and the decisions don't change. It's just cool now because he gets to share that love for aviation with others. So it was really neat for me to see the video of them flying together because I saw so many of the words and phrases and habits that I had taught Daniel that are characteristics of me as an instructor, and they are now imparted on Daniel. They are things that he does by habit. They are words that he says by habit, and they are safety decisions that he makes by habit. So it was so cool to see some of me make it into Daniel's, the way Daniel is a pilot. And that is a really, really, really cool feeling. So where does that bring me? And again, huge congratulations to Daniel. Well-deserved. He didn't necessarily do it on his own. Obviously, we all need help to get somewhere, but I did not do it for him. And he had to put in the work and he had to do it, and he deserves all the credit, 100% of the credit for what he did. I was just a conduit of the knowledge to get him there. Big congratulations to Daniel. So now where does Daniel go from here? First off, he's going to be learning from here on out. This is where the real learning begins. He's on his own. He's going to have to make his own safety decisions. He doesn't need any endorsements or anything for him to go anywhere. It's all up to him now. He gets to make all those decisions. Doesn't have to call me. Doesn't have to do anything. It's all up to him. And really, when you start building that experience, that's where the true lessons start to happen. And you see why the FAA has really worked to change their curriculum on the ACS, and or rather their testing criteria is a better term for the ACS, the written test, scenario-based training, all those things, because experience really does teach you quite a bit when you're going here and there. So Daniel's going to be learning a lot from here and building time. Of course, for me, I have so many improvements to make. I have many improvements to make in the way I teach, in the way I organize the information, in the way I present that information, and also in how I communicate. So there isn't one area in how I'm a pilot or an instructor or a manager or a businessman that doesn't need to improve. And I learned a lot of things that I can do there. So that was very worthwhile. The future is very bright. I'm so excited to have gone through this process with Daniel and honored that as a friend, he gets to be, or rather is, my first private pilot student. That will always remain a memory for me and one that I'll treasure. And it's pretty special. So this is just further proof that this is what I love to do. It is all about the individual. It's even about you, the listener out there, and what you're going through. You know, you may not live here in Alaska. You may not ever get the opportunity to learn anything from me one-on-one, face-to-face. If you're ever here in Alaska, I invite you to come see me and fly with me. But most likely that's not going to happen, right? But what can you learn from this process? Daniel is not unlike many of you in the challenges he has in life with family and money and time and career. That personal drive to go through those barriers to get where he wants to go. This is not an easy process. The FAA does not have a system where they give away private pilot licenses or any license. This is an industry where you have to earn it. You have to earn this license. No one can do it for you. There's no way to cheat your way through it. So you earn what you get as a private pilot. And it is a true achievement to become a pilot at any level. You know, it takes a lot of work. There's no shortcuts. There's no get rich quick schemes here. There's no entitlement. You get what you earn in aviation, and it takes a whole lot of work to get there. Daniel earned it, and I want you to think about if you have this dream of becoming a pilot at any level, whether that's just recreationally or if it's if it's professionally, if you eventually want to become a professional pilot, what is it going to take for you to get there? How do your life circumstances need to be adjusted or changed, or your mindset or paradigms adjusted or changed to get you to where you can make this happen? Because I can tell you right now, if it just remains status quo and you're just going to do the same things and expect the money to come one day, or for aviation to get cheaper to get into, or the time to come back, it probably won't. Then you're going to be down the road in your 60s, finally getting your private pilot license. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If you finally come to that realization when you're at that age, or if you're 99 or 100 years old, I don't care when it is. If you finally come to that, then you're going to come to it in a place where you're having to make some changes or adjustments, or simply just putting your shoulder into it and getting it done. So I didn't have any notes on any of that. But that is definitely how I feel, that no one can give this to you, but you can certainly earn it through your own hard work. And I've never heard of anyone regret getting a pilot's license, but I've heard of plenty of people that regret not getting a pilot license. So just keep that in mind. If there's anything I can do to help you, please reach out. Again, me at aviatorcast.com, and I will answer your question, try to push you in the right direction, see what I can do to help with where I am and where you are. And that's it. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. We're going to have a couple closing messages, and then I'll have a final thought here at the end.
Join us next week for another exciting topic or interview with a great guest. All AviatorCast resources can be found at aviatorcast.com. Subscribe to AviatorCast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, and other podcast services. Did you enjoy the show? Review AviatorCast on iTunes or similar service. If your review is aired on the show, we'll send you an official AviatorCast t-shirt. As always, we'd love to hear from you. Write AviatorCast at me@aviatorcast.com to introduce yourself or to ask any questions you may have about aviation. Now, for the final release clearance, back to Chris Palmer.
All right, so that's it for this episode of AviatorCast. Again, a huge congratulations goes out to Daniel for passing his private pilot. If you guys want to wish Daniel a congratulations, feel free to go to our Angle of Attack Instagram, where I've posted several pictures and videos there throughout the process of Daniel's training. We have some recent photos of Daniel on his check ride day, and those are pretty exciting and fun, and you can wish him congratulations there. And thank you, the listener, for coming here. Thank you for being patient as I am learning and growing. And, you know, I know I've been away for several months here. I need to get back into the muscle memory of doing this podcast again, and hope this is the first of many in getting there. Join us next time. Plenty of thoughts to share. Plenty has transpired here over the last several months. I want to share more of that with you. And then we're once again going to get into some interviews with other aviators. So until next time, throttle on!